You are about to enter a world beyond your five senses. A world where doubt and certainty walk hand in hand. A world where strangeness is king and mystery is his bastard child. You are about to enter Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world. In 1965, a revolutionary new TV series gave the world Philip Lamar's amazing vision of the future. I'm Lionel Nimrod. The series was, of course, Star Ark, and I played Mackay, the sole surviving member of a species of genetically engineered hairy mutants called the Morloi. To this day, I'm still greeted in the street with my oft misquoted catchphrase, "Oi, oi, oi, oi." But what will the future really hold? Today, me and my team will discover the truth. Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world of the future! And please welcome your miners of the most secret shaft!
I'm Stuart Lee.
And I was christened Richard Herring.
Hello and welcome to another Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World, coming to you from the hallowed corridors of learning of Glasgow University. The future. Why is it kept hidden from us? When if we knew what it was in advance, we would at least know if we needed to take a cagoule and a change of pants.
What sign will warn us that the end is nigh? Christians believe it will be earthquakes, famine and apocalyptic wars, whereas most students seem to believe that it's the end of the world when a pint costs more than 50p.
Could Back to the Future's Michael J. Fox really travel through time? And if so, why didn't he travel back to 1986 and stop himself appearing in The Secret of My Success and Teen Wolf?
Boring novelist H.G. Wells tried to predict the future in his book The Shape of Things to Come. Penguin, 1933. Uncannily, Wells managed to foretell what shape nearly all things would come to be almost 50 years in advance, only slipping up on the video recorder, which he confidently stated would be triangular.
In the 1960s, actor Roddy McDowall first put forward his theory that in the future, the world would be ruled by talking apes. At the time, he was laughed out of Hollywood, but today we only have to turn on our televisions to see chimpanzees chattering away about how much they like PG tips.
Glasgow has its own terrifying vision of the future in the popular Alien War attraction, which gives a bleak and pessimistic view of the 21st century. Their post-nuclear environment is a world of dark underground passages, strewn with twisted metal, littered with corpses, billowing with smoke, and inhabited only by out-of-work Glaswegian actors in rubber alien suits who run around frightening small children and old ladies.
Science fiction writers argue that it may be possible to see into the future by stretching the fabric of time. But what exactly is the fabric of time, and how far will it stretch? Earlier this week, I went to the famous fabric store, Liberty's, where they actually keep a roll of the fabric of time under the counter. And here it is.
So this is the fabric of time, is it, Rich? This is a hardy but unpleasant-feeling Terraline material with a design on it based around the Thomas the Tank Engine character. And you reckon if we stretch this, we can see the future?
Yes, Stuart. And here to help us stretch the fabric of time is Turkish secret policeman Akbar Mustafa.
Hello. Hello, teşekkürler, and long live the generals.
Akbar has kindly agreed to come in and use his skills to stretch the time fabric on his rather special rack. Akbar, what's this rack normally used for exactly?
Well, I use it to stretch, you know, new shoes, balloons, pastry. Not political prisoners of any sort.
So what's this sort of bloody red mark here?
It's just some blackcurrant jam from a broken pastry puff that wouldn't talk.
Right, see, Akbar. Well, stretch away, and at the end of the show, we'll see how you've got on.
In the meantime, what better way to find out about the world of tomorrow than by welcoming our second guest, tomorrow's world presenter, Judith Hamm.
Hello.
Judith, thanks for coming in. Now, I hope you won't think I'm being too flattering, but of all the middle-aged women in Britain, you are probably the one that knows the most about scientific developments that are sort of nearly completed, but aren't really quite ready to be used properly yet, aren't you?
It's very kind of you to say so. So, listeners, follow me through my doorway into the year 2000.
Whee!
That's right, a sliding door. In the year 2000, all doors will slide open, making an unnecessary Star Trek-style swishing noise. Knobs and hinges will be things of the past, meaning massive unemployment in both the knob and hinge communities. In the future, TV sets will be a thing of the past. Every home will have its own personal hologrammatic 3D cinema, complete with hologrammatic unruly children throwing popcorn, teenage couples snogging in the back row, a very tall person in the seat in front, and of course futuristic 21st century cinema adverts.
The splendour of India, the majesty of her temples, the mystery of the Ganges.
At the Glasgow Tandoori, just round the corner from this cinema.
Come with me now into the kitchen of the future. In the year 2000, today's food will be a thing of the past. All food will be mass-produced in pill form.
Yeah, but Judith, if all food is in pill form, what form will pills take?
Ironically, Stuart, they will take the form of food. Rather than making dangerous drugs look exactly like Smarties so children eat them and die, they will make them resemble unpleasant foodstuffs, sprouts, beetroot, or Kellogg's Pop-Tarts. In the year 2000, I will still be presenting Tomorrow's World. Although, in the future, my co-presenter, Michael Rodd, will be a thing of the past, as he is today.
But is there any scientific invention which has the ability of definite prediction?
Well, yes, there is. It's this. It's called, quite simply, a predictor, and it's on sale at all major high street chemists. Now, this has the amazing ability to be able to predict months in advance if a woman is going to have a baby simply by changing colour when it comes into contact with her urine.
And to find out how it works, will you please welcome the world's leading expert on urine from the urine department of Leicester Polytechnic, Professor of Urine, Professor Andrew Speckley.
Thank you. Yes, hello. But if I could just pick you up on a bit of an embarrassing mistake you made introducing me. Leicester Polytechnic has now become De Montfort University.
I'm sorry, has the urine department changed its name as well?
No.
How did you become so interested in urine, Professor Speckley?
Well, I just began studying it one day and it grew from there. There's nothing funny about me, or my wife.
So how does the predictor work?
Well, the predictor works by reading the hidden secrets of the future that are mystically concealed in all human urine. Which means it can predict other things apart from imminent birth, depending on what colour it goes.
Let's put your thesis to the test.
Thesis has got nothing to do with it. I've told you, I'm interested in urine.
Right, let's put your theory to the test. Now, before the show, we asked everyone in our audience to give us a sample of their urine. And we're going to use the predictor to see if we can find out a little bit more about the future of those of you here tonight.
You, Adam, what's your name, please?
Siobhan.
Siobhan, right. Now, if I have a look at your urine sample, I see that you have turned the predictor yellow, which possibly isn't altogether surprising. Professor?
Right, yellow. Yellow means you'll spend the next 2 years lying in bed all day watching Richard and Judy and sponging off your parents.
Probably quite a common prediction for a lot of the people here tonight, that one. Sir, what's your name?
Martin.
Martin, you have turned the predictor orange. Orange, Professor.
Yes, orange. Orange means you drink too much iron brew.
How about my future, Professor? My sample has turned the predictor pink.
Ah, pink. That means you're going to have a baby. Congratulations.
Oh, that's good news.
Now, Professor, in your book, Urine, De Montfort University Press, 1992, you claim that the predictor can also be used to predict the destinies of entire nations. What, for example, is to become of Scotland?
Well, over the last 6 months, my wife and I have gone from door to door to collect an equally sized sample of urine from each Scottish person. And then Mrs. Speckley mixed them up in this tank with a stick. Mrs. Speckley didn't swim around naked in it or anything. Well, I danced to a gramophone. Place the predictor in the tank, Richard. Nice and deep.
It's gone blue.
Blue, let's see now. Yeah, according to my colour chart, blue means that by 1995, Scotland will not only be independent, but our armies will have imposed martial law over all of England and the nicer parts of Wales. The urine has spoken.
Throughout history, many people have attempted to prophesize the future. Here's Judith Hamm.
Hello again. Earlier this week at the Tomorrow's World office, I received a prototype of an invention that is able to snatch dead people from the past and bring them into the present day for a limited time.
It's amazing what they can do these days, isn't it, Judith? What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to bring the top dead prophets of the past right here today and hold a sort of quiz to find out who was the best. First, from the land of Canaan, not long after the Bible began, will you please welcome Technicolor Dreamcoat wearer Joseph, son of Jacob.
Everybody needs good neighbours.
Good day, mate. Good on you. Fair dinkum. I'll interpret your dreams. Any dream will do.
Hello. You're from Canaan, are you?
Too right, Sheila.
Joseph, is there any dream you haven't understood?
Well, there is just one. Once I dreamt I was in this public toilet and I saw this guy who looked like me and was dressed in a kind of a technicoloured coat like mine, and he was in the cubicle beckoning for Philip Schofield to come in and join him. And I don't know what that meant.
Do you think it meant...
No, I didn't mean that. Oh.
Our second contestant comes from medieval France. Please welcome Nostradamus.
Hello.
Do you think, as some critics say, that your predictions are so hopelessly vague they could be interpreted to mean almost anything?
Well, yes and no. It depends. I would say that some of them are a bit vague, but clear as well, both at the same time.
And finally, from 20th century Scotland, predictor of a gust of wind, Lord of the Weathermen, Ian McCaskill.
Hello. Good evening, with light showers later.
Now, Joseph, Nostradamus, Ian McCaskill, to find out which of you is best, get ready to play What Happens Next? I will show our prophets a piece of film from some sporting event, but then I'm going to stop the film and ask you all, what happens next? Yes, Ian Rush shoots at goal. John Lukic saves, picks up the ball, walks it out to the edge of the box, and what happens next? Nostradamus.
The young lion will roar and bring terror to the House of Saxony.
No. I think you're guessing there, really, aren't you? Joseph.
I had a dream about this. Do the seven thin, scrawny sheaves of corn come on and eat the fat, poor Gascoigne?
I'm afraid not, Joseph. You're thinking of the Tottenham-Arsenal 1991 match, aren't you? Ian.
Does Lukic misthrow the ball to Rush's feet, then Rush turns and bang, 1-0?
Yes, Ian is right. Rush scores.
That's what I said.
You didn't, Nostradamus. You said something about a young lion.
That's my special code for Ian Rush. Lion, le Ian, the Ian. And Rush is 29, that's young.
Hang on a minute. What about the terror to the House of Saxony thing you said?
Terror to the House of Saxony is an anagram of after Lukic drops the ball.
It isn't.
You forget, Judith. I'm speaking medieval French. It is an anagram in that.
Ian McCaskill is the winner. For now, Ian, we're going to lock you in a soundproof booth and we'll release you at the end of the show so you can tell us just what the future will be.
Thanks.
In 1986, the elfin American singer-songwriter Suzanne Vega described gypsies as having hands of running water, earrings in their ears, with the fingers of the potters and the laughing tail of the fool. While the Residents Association of the Monk's Path Housing Estate, Solihull, in the West Midlands, described them very differently as work-shy, stinking, thieving gits.
But they are wrong. Gypsies represent a valuable link back to the noble nomadic past of Western man, are in touch with the mystical forces beyond our knowledge, and the gypsy diet of butterflies and slugs makes them a treasured friend to the gardener.
Plus, through their magic, all gypsies can tell what's going to happen to mankind in the future.
And on its way into the studio now is a gypsy caravan, which conceals the wizened form of the elderly gypsy prophet, Gypsy Rose. Stuart and I are going to step inside and have our futures told by the ancient art of the gypsy tarot cards.
Boys, boys, come in, sit down, prepare to enter the mystical and terrifying world of the tarot.
Oh, all right.
Richard Herring, pick a card.
Right. It's a bear man and a naked lady kissing in a kind of a bush. What's that?
That card is the lovers, and it means that love will be in some way important at some stage in your future life.
Wow! Can you tell me who my lover will be? Is it Julia Sawala, off of TV's Charming Press Gang series?
I'm sorry, I can't see. And remember, the lover's card might also mean that love will play no part in your future.
Well, that's really pathetic, isn't it, to be quite honest? I mean, it's so vague that it could mean anything. It's just a con.
Silence, unbeliever. You pick a card now.
Yeah, yeah.
What does it show, Stuart?
Well, I'd rather not say, actually, about...
Go on, you must!
Well, all right. It's a picture of me visiting the St. George's Hospital Tooting Genito-Urinary Infections Clinic.
Yes, the Stuart Lee visiting the St. George's Hospital Tooting Genito-Urinary Infections Clinic card.
What does that card mean?
It means that Stuart will shortly begin undergoing a course of treatment for a minor sexually transmitted disease at the St. George's Hospital Tooting Genito-Urinary Infections Clinic.
No, I won't.
You will, Stuart. You showed me it at the swimming bath. Remember, you scared that old man.
All right. Well, that's enough tarot readings for today. Goodbye, Gypsy Rose. Thanks very much indeed. So, as we can see, tarot cards are wrong, completely wrong.
Now, to believe that fortune-telling is at all possible, you must logically believe that the future is already set and just waiting to be told.
If you ask a religious person why unfair things happen, they'll reply, "For it is written, and so it must be shall." But where is it written?
Well, if our next guest is to believe, Stuart, it's written here, in this series of mouldy A4 school exercise books. Would you please welcome from a fishing village on the shores of the Dead Sea, Yarni the Shepherd Boy, and his interpreter, Elizabeth Narkin. Hello, Yarni.
Hello, Shahari Hashawo. Hello.
Hello, Richard. It is a pleasure to be in your country. If you come and stay near the Dead Sea, my brother has very good hotel there. Very cheap. There is drinking, and my brother knows where the girls are to be found. The ladies, you like them, yes? Very cheap. The ladies, dancing with big ass, yes. One day I am in a cave near the Dead Sea when I seed the Dead Sea exercise books, and they got all the whole script written by God of all human destiny in English. But to see them, it is not cheap. You must pay.
Yeah. All right, it's 10p, all right?
Your generosity overflows. Here are the books.
Ow!
Great, we've got the script of all human destiny.
Yeah, we'll see.
Let's see if we can find a bit with us in. Look, here we are, page 11. It's the start of the show. Here's the bit we're on now. Apparently, I've just said, here's the bit we're on now. And my next line is, Stuart, I'm not taking my clothes off for anyone.
Look, do you seriously think, right, that God would go to the bother of writing the whole script of our future out in longhand, and that all of us are merely acting it out as we go along, not even knowing if the next page will call for embarrassing bad language, dangerous motorcycle stunts, or compromising nude and topless scenes?
Stuart, I'm not taking my clothes off for anyone. Wow!
Look, right. Give the book to me, right, and I'll prove I'm not just a character in someone else's script by saying something different than my line.
I can't, Stuart. The stage directions say Richard refuses to give Stuart the book and decides to look ahead to see what the future holds for him. Next Wednesday, what's going on? You're back in Cheddar with my family dressed in black at St. Andrew's Church. Where am I? What? I don't believe it. You're giving a speech about me. It's a memorial speech. I'm dead.
Oh, well, let's have a look. If I copy the speech down, it'll save me the bother of having to write it. Here it is. Rich was basically a nice bloke. Bit annoying, but there you go. Well, it just reads like I'm making it up, doesn't it?
Well, you didn't bother to write anything, did you?
Oh, look, 1996. I get off with Julia Sawala from Press Gang.
OK, can't believe it. I'm going to die and you're going to get off with Julia Sawala. What else happens in the future?
Well, I don't know. All the pages are stuck together.
Stu, if you say something different than it says here, perhaps the curse will be broken and the future will be different and I will live.
Oh, give us a break, Rich. We're talking about Julia Sawala here. Anyway, look, don't worry. It's probably all rubbish anyway. You know, I mean, you know what these foreigners are like. They'll do anything to make 10p.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I'll just chuck this in the bin then.
Besides, it doesn't tell us anything after 1996 anyway. And what everyone really wants to know about the future is when the world will end, so they can plan their holidays around it and cancel the papers.
Jehovah's Witnesses have an unusual end of world philosophy. According to W.C. Stevenson in his book, Year of Doom 1975, they believe that the end of the world will definitely take place by the year 1975. So if a Jehovah's Witness ever knocks on your door, simply say, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you now. As you know, the world ended nearly 20 years ago.
The year 1999 figures predominantly as a prediction of the end of the world in the writings of the mystic Nostradamus, in pop star Prince's 1999 single, and in the puppeteer Gerry Anderson's Space 1999. However, all these men are mistaken. 1999 is not the end of the world. It's the end of the century. An easy mistake to make, but one you think they'd have spotted by now.
The superstitious Catholic French believe that the end of the world will be marked by the total absence of any smell whatsoever, which explains the national creed of making everything stink to high heaven all the time and never washing at all in the hope of postponing the final day. The Christian apocalypse is to be signalled by the arrival of four dark horsemen. Radio 4's new audio diary series, Ear on the Wall, about the more eccentric members of British society, spent a week with one of those horsemen.
I am Pestilence, one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. My day begins at 5:45 a.m. Each day, as I have done since the beginning of time, I ring up one of the other horsemen of the apocalypse to see if today's the day. Hello, famine.
Oh, Pestilence, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, man. What do you want?
Is it the apocalypse today, famine?
Look, Pestilence, has Babylon the great mother of harlots and abomination of the earth, drunk the blood of the saints yet?
No.
Well, it's not the apocalypse, is it? Right? Now let me get some rest.
Never mind. I'll speak to you again tomorrow then, I expect. I am called a horseman of the apocalypse, yes. And in the old days, I used to have a horse. But you have to move with the times. And a horse, well, it's not the modern way. So now I've got a milk float. Which I suppose makes me a milkman of the apocalypse. The other horsemen are still using horses. I think they're a bit jealous of me.
We are sick to the back teeth of him, to be quite honest. We're going to look ridiculous come the last days, aren't we? Me, famine and death, in hooded shrouds, riding black phantom horses, and Pestilence in his Unigate cap and apron, driving a milk float. In any case, a horse is faster than a milk float.
I know what they say about me behind my back, and I could use a big fast car or a tank instead, but a milk float runs on electricity, which is good for the environment. Especially in this day and age. I know ultimately I am going to be responsible for the decimation of the entire planet, but until then, we've only got one world, and I, for one, intend to look after it. The other good thing about having a milk float is that while I'm waiting to be called to do my apocalyptic duty, I'm able to do a milk round, which helps fill up my day. The others don't have any hobbies, which explains why they're so grumpy.
Morning, Pestilence.
Morning, Mrs. Danfleece. The usual 2 pints.
Yes, please, you charmer. He is the best milky we've ever had. And although he's a bit odd looking, you know, the buboes and the flaking skin and his limbs falling off, I know a lot of housewives who'd like to get their hands on his extra pinter, if you know what I mean.
I do have to be careful, though, because I keep a supply of Pestilence in milk bottles down at the dairy, ready for when the apocalypse comes. And one day, I accidentally got the milk and the Pestilence mixed up. And, well, you can imagine what happened. It took me a while to build the roundup again after that, I can tell you. 8 o'clock at night now. I've watched Emmerdale, and it's time for bed. Perhaps tomorrow will be the apocalypse. I hope not. Mrs. Danfleece's husband is away on business, and she's ordered some of my special yogurt. Night-night.
Let's see how Akbar is getting on with the fabric of time.
Talk, you tank engine, talk!
or I get out the electrodes and the broken Coca-Cola bottle. Oh, hello again, my Scottish friends. The fabric of time has stretched almost 16 centimetres.
Yes, the fat controller is looking positively lithe. I'd never thought it would have stretched that much.
Well, before we release Ian McCaskill from the booth, we need just one more piece of information.
That's right, it's time for Peter Fenn's Hammond Organ Believe It or Not file.
Believe it or not, the Oracle of Delphi was the ancient Greeks' fast-moving electronic teletext prediction service, rivaling the less well-known CFAX of Athens.
Thanks, Peter. And this week's Hammond organ music was?
It was the fabulous tune, Music to Watch Girls By.
By?
That's by Ramin. And let me tell you, Richard, whenever I watch girls through the net curtains, that is the music I watch them by. But don't tell Mrs. Fenn.
Well, thanks, Peter. So, Ian McCaskill is now out of the booth, and Judith Han is crowning him King of the Prophets. Ian, tell us, what will the future be like?
Well, I've given a lot of thought, and I've decided that it will be rainy with sunny intervals.
Thanks, Ian.
Ah, you filthy fabric! I warn you, you have angered me!
Mustafa, keep that scimitar away from Thomas the Tank Engine's face!
Watch out, Sahib! The fabric of time! She is ripping!
Ah!
What's happened to Rich? Was he gone?
Well, I'm Judith Han. And I reckon that Richard has been sucked off, literally, into tomorrow's world.
Rich, can you hear us? Where are you?
Hello, Glasgow. I can't believe what's happened. I've gone all the way from Glasgow University to the year 2525. As Roddy McDowell thought, the planet Earth is now ruled by superintelligent apes who have made humans their slaves. Although only seconds have elapsed for you in the studio, I've already been here for nearly 3 years. I've been made the slave of an evil ape called Galen.
Human, bring more PG tips.
Amazingly enough, the urine predictor was right. I have had a baby. A strange hybrid of ape and man.
You mean a gorilla forced himself on you?
Sort of. I don't know if my child and I will ever be able to escape back to our own time.
Look, the kid's an ape, you know, human ones are bad enough. Leave it behind.
No, Stuart. I am his mother. I love him.
I guess that means you're doomed to live and die in the future, Richard, far from all those you love and cherish. Don't worry, I'll give you a nice speech at your memorial service. And at least we now know what's in the future. Thanks, Richie.
Richard, it's Ian McCaskill here. What's the weather like?
It's rainy with sunny intervals.
Yeah, I was right!
You, human, fetch those bananas!
Poor Richard Herring.
Good, well, that's all from us this week. But remember, all you young people of Glasgow University, youth is but a fleeting moment of our lives. And we're all hurtling slowly but surely into the future, where your young bodies will become broken, wrinkled and bent. So enjoy yourselves now while you can, right? Do you fancy a drink, Judith?
All right, I'll get a taxi.
Goodbye.
What about this sexually transmitted disease, though?
Right,
So the stinking black curtain we call time is drawn aside. Was Philip Lamar's Star Ark fantasy of the future so ridiculous? Our planet is indeed decaying, and although we don't all wear polo neck sweaters as Philip imagined, was Mackay the Morloy a fictional character or a prophecy? How long before every street corner genuinely rings with the cry, oi, 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 oi? Join me, Lionel Nimrod, again next time for more journeys into this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World was performed by Richard Herring, Stuart Lee, Rebecca Front and Armando Iannucci, with Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Stuart Lee and Richard Herring and produced for the good of future society by Sarah Smith. We'll be right back.